the BucketCast, hosted by yours truly, BucketReviews.com, film critic and podcaster, yes, podcaster, Danny Baldwin. And today in studio, we have none other than your favorite retrospectives maiden.
It's me, Michael Lester.
Well, that was some kind of cue. I didn't even think that you would do that.
Oh, I did.
Thanks for being in studio on a lazy Monday, Michael, as this was not planned. This was merely our timely reaction to the death of David Carradine.
I think it's appropriate that we do this.
Yes, it will be a ritualistic healing experience for all of us. We will get all of our angst about Carradine out, right? It was a tragic time for you, on.
Yes, yes. No, you wake up in the morning and it's David Carradine's dead. It's not a good day.
And being a second-year pre-med student, I'm sure you can tell us all about autoerotic asphyxiation.
It was definitely a death by misadventure.
Yes, it was. I would not want to tell his kids that their father died with a penis around... No, a yarn around a penis.
Penis wrapped around his throat. What are you trying to say?
I don't know. But anyway, I do not want to make... This is offensive what I'm doing here. This is one of the most iconic actors of all time that just died, and I'm making light
of
it.
Come on, we're supposed to be doing a tribute. Now, let's get to that.
This is a somber day. We will be talking David Carradine. And Michael, you know, I think that for people of our generation who may not know all about David Carradine, Bill is really how we know him. From Kill Bill, of course.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's how... You know, I was definitely introduced to him by...
That was me, too.
And I think that's where most people stop. We didn't really see a lot of him because he did a lot of B-movies. And television, we know him as Kane from Kung Fu. And today, we're going to examine some of his other roles.
Yeah, we are. And one of them is hard to find, Death Race 2000, which Michael will be covering. And it's really a shame. Because in Kill Bill, you really get the sense that he is an icon and a larger-than-life figure. But so much of what's available... is not his larger-than-life stuff. If you look at his credits, he has like 6 movies per year some years, and a lot of it didn't even see the light of day.
It's terrible that he did a lot of movies that just fell to the B market and TV. We never got to see a lot of David Carradine.
But then again, that's kind of what he's known for, so he had certainly a varied and rich career by most standards. One that maybe style overwhelmed substance. But hey, when you got as much style as this guy did, why do you need substance?
So, you're going to be opening with Boxcar Bertha, and I'm going to be doing Death Race 2000. Both bookended, you know, one of the highest points of his career, Kung Fu.
Yes, we're starting at kind of the genesis. These movies came about maybe 10 years into his credited roles, but really marked the blow-up of David Carradine, I think. Both produced by the legendary Roger Corman, then leading, of course, to this rich career. But anyway, let's get into the action. We're going to talk Martin Scorsese's second film, Boxcar Bertha, which Carradine has a prominent supporting role in. It was by no means Carradine's first on-screen role. In fact, he had been working in movies and TV for nearly 10 years before this was made, but arguably his supporting performance as Big Bill Shelley was one of the things that led him to become the recognized actor that he was, and also one of the few good things about this otherwise mediocre film, which is one of the few blemishes on Scorsese's impeccable resume. Carradine may share the screen with a freewheeling Barbara Hershey here, but he's never upstaged by her. Hershey plays the title character, and the setting is the American South in the brute of the Great Depression. In the first scene, the audience sees Bertha devastated as she watches her father die in a small plane crash that's essentially the fault of a reckless and exploitative employer. Carradine's Big Bill, a union man and a rabble-rouser, is there to appeal to Bertha at the vulnerable moment in her life. He lures Bertha into his unsavory crowd, and soon enough, she's been implicated in the murder of a gambler, and their established gang of train robbers has stolen its fair share of loot. They're criminals on the run. If that sounds like Bonnie and Clyde to you, that's because it is. This was made 3 years after that Arthur Penn classic, and the producer, Roger Corman, who also produced Michael's pick, Death Race 2000, said it was his response to that movie. I think it's more of a ripoff, and a poorly conceived one at that. The movie fails in many regards, and is referred to as Scorsese's weakest. Not only is some of the action muddled, but the movie's attempts to use a greatly embellished version of a woman's experiences in the Great Depression as a parallel to the racial and gender issues of the hippie and civil rights movement doesn't gel at all. But the reason I've chosen Boxcar Bertha, because it's really not a very good movie, as a way to remember Carradine is because the actor's performance really reminds the viewer that any role, no matter how small, can provide an opportunity to shine. Carradine makes Bill fit in his usual iconic actor's mold. He's charismatic and alluring in the way that mouthpieces for causes are, in this case a union mouthpiece, but he also clearly has a dark and dangerous side, perhaps only one that someone so charismatic could have in the first place. Not to mention, making this film was clearly a learning experience for Scorsese, who exploded just 1 year later onto the filmmaking scene with the classic Mean Streets. While often marred by a poor script by actually a physician by practice, Dr. Ben L. Reitman, and Corman's trademark flair for violence, some of the camera work is remarkably beautiful and intricate for a movie shot on 16mm for about $600,000. The action scenes, while narratively wobbly, are paced with a great deal of expertise, and a certain crucifixion sequence in the finale is pretty shocking and powerful. One assumes in the way that Corman intended the rest of the movie to seem. Not to mention, the movie serves as a reminder that small guerrilla indies can tackle historical fiction just as big-budget pictures can. These days, they seem to either have to be French or about a war to do so, which is really unfortunate because history can, of course, be a template to voice larger themes. While Boxcar Bertha's own attempt to find said voice isn't fully realized, Carradine is pretty damn compelling as Big Bill, and that's all we're asking for on this show, ain't it, Michael?
Yeah, Carradine definitely stands out as a character, and he, like you said, he has that dark and alluring side, which you basically see many years later in Bill and Kill Bill, where he's kind of those guys that you love to hate.
And this really is kind of a Carradine movie in a roundabout way. I mean, it's not that good, and it's not that watchable at times. Sometimes it's really tedious, but it captures that iconic sense, and it's very gritty and raw and indie, and it has all those traits, and you really feel that history is being made. This was one of Scorsese's first movies, and you get the feeling that Carradine is lending to that because he really did try to foster this independent guerrilla movement.
Mm-hmm. That's the thing that really struck me was I cannot believe this was Martin Scorsese. It felt like someone else completely, except for some of the shots. The shots kind of stood out as something that Scorsese might do, but...
But it doesn't exactly seem like... I think it really does distinctly feel, once you know, like Martin Scorsese doing Roger Corman.
Yeah, well, doing Roger Corman.
I mean, this is exploitative and dirty in all the ways that a Roger Corman picture is.
Well, that's what I read. He said that he gave... $600,000 to Martin Scorsese as long as he didn't exploitative film.
And the last scene, I think it might be the most powerful scene in the movie, and yet it's totally reviling. I mean, it really is.
Yeah, I mean, it is a little bit sad that the best part is the most reviling part of the movie, but it does stand out.
You've
know?
Got to give credit to the fact that Carradine carries this the whole way through. He really stands out, and even in the beginning where it's just kind of, you don't know what to expect.
If it was anyone else, I don't think they could have done as well.
Yeah, I really don't think so. And, you know, for me, maybe it's just that I'm conservative, but I can't get into this very wild, oatsy, hippy-dippy Barbara Hershey thing, even though I guess by historical standards she's regarded as a very beautiful leading lady.
Yeah, I mean, those overtones do drag it down a little bit.
You know, that's interesting. That's an interesting point that I made, I do say so myself, is that this movie... Michael just audibly groaned if you didn't hear that. But this movie tries to parallel the Great Depression, you can tell, with some of the movements in the 60s that it was made after. And it didn't really stick together for me in that regard, did it?
No, I mean, they tried to pull a every minority they could. They had a woman, they had a union leader, they had... an African-American man, they had a Jewish guy. It was just like, how many minorities can we put in there?
I guess we just didn't live in the 60s and the 70s, and we were not part of that free-thinking movement, right?
I guess, Danny, I guess.
But let's talk about a much better Roger Corman movie, right?
Yes, Death Race 2000. Carradine's second picture after Kung Fu. Let me give you a little quote that he said why he took this role. I started this picture 2 weeks after I walked off the Kung Fu set. And that was essentially my image, the Kung Fu character. And a lot of people still believe I'm that guy. The idea actually was, number one, if you walk off a television series, you better do a movie right away, or you might never get to do one. And the second thing was to do something right away that would create the image of a monster to get rid of that image of that little Chinese guy that had been playing for 4 years. And you know, it did kickstart my movie career.
Oh, I get it. A pun. Kickstart. No. You know, like vroom vroom, cars go kickstart.
Yeah.
Okay, go on.
So the movie opens to gathering crowds, taking their seats, marching bands, and bellowing announcers. Is it opening day of baseball season? Is it the 4th of July? No, of course not. It's the Death Race, a cross-country road wreck, based not only on who crosses the finish line first, but how many hapless pedestrians the competitors can run down. In the year 2000, the United States is formed into the fascist police state, the United Provinces, which is led by the cult figure known only as Mr. President. The Death Race is a government-sanctioned event, a blood sport, a three-day drive from Manhattan to LA. The top racer, played by David Carradine, is a man known as Frankenstein, who has most of his body replaced due to the numerous crashes he's been into, and wears a mask to hide his scars. At his heels is the number two racer, Machine Gun Joe, played by Sylvester Stallone, who's looking to take his place as the number one racer. While the racers roar across the country, a resistance group opposed to both the government and the vicious race attempts to sabotage the race by killing off the racers. They also plan to kill Frankenstein and replace him with another racer, who will in turn murder Mr. President when he congratulates the winner. However, all their actions are ironically played off as the French attacking. I'm going to save the end for you because I don't want to give away some of the twists that happened, but you guys gotta check this movie out, Death Race 2000. Despite its campy story and the effects, the movie actually provides a startling critique of human behavior. It uses sports and entertainment as opiates for the masses in order to distract them from their failing economy and this new domineering government. It even goes as far as awarding the widow of the first pedestrian killed with a new house and television so she can watch the race next year.
Yeah, you know, Michael, I don't think they make this kind of balls-to-the-walls, high-adrenaline, sheer entertaining version of social commentary anymore, really. It's just, looking back, especially, it achieves such a potency when commenting on these issues and this kind of totalitarian government, almost, and how it swept us all up and how the media really plays to that.
Yeah, the media is definitely a big part of the movie. That all the announcers are very smarmy, they're very wormy, they're trying to get up and close next to the racers so they can boost their own fame, and it really kind of just shows.
And that's seamlessly integrated with this idea of Americana, as evidenced by the opening shots, where you see kids coming out. I think there's some with snow cones and things, and, you know, it just...
It's an event.
Yeah, an event so tied into the cultural fabric. And that's really what this movie wants to do in terms of its social commentary.
Yeah, I mean, they even show to the extent that there's personality cults developing around the racers, that people almost worship them as something greater than they actually are.
And what is more American ideal than the resistance that develops and the subsequent response that it's from the French?
Yeah, that's pretty right down
but,
to
but
it.
But we're stepping around the main point of this movie, and that's that it's a campy delight in every regard. And it's truly a David Carradine movie and truly a Roger Corman movie. It's exploitative, it's wacko. The only person who really one-ups David Carradine some of the times is Sylvester Stallone as Machine Gun Joe, but we're going to get into that a little bit later. Carradine plays Frankenstein, and he appears on screen first in almost reptilian gear. It's a full body suit, and we can't see any of it until it's revealed when pulled off in an intimate scene with his navigator, who has a hidden agenda.
Yeah, but you're looking at his suit. He's got a cape, he's got a face mask, and you see these nasty scars under the mask, and he's just so awkward around people. He's seething, he's glaring,
yeah, he moves weird. He really plays it straight, and this is why Carradine became a kind of king of B-movies, is that he's able to just play this like it's really happening, and it's so funny in retrospect, and I assume when it was at the time, but it's just so funny.
There's a lot of humor in the movie, despite the commentary that's happening.
I have never been so... I mean, I don't think I've been so entertained by a movie in the last 5 years. I really think this is terrific. I mean, it goes as far as having a racer run over a prosthetic baby.
Even better. One person insists on playing a matador to one of the cars that's shaped like a bull. So he's charging around.
They can't see you on the radio. Michael is just imitating a matador at his
back. Yes, I'm doing it. I don't have the cloak.
I think we're just gushing too much because it really is an experience.
This would be something to see on the big screen.
And parodies, or better yet, at a drive-in. Because I cannot even imagine. I wonder, knowing everything I do about like media research effects, we've seen in movies like Notorious, we've seen all these shootings after violent movies, and it's proven that immediately after watching violent movies, people are more inclined to behave violently. So how funny, but not really funny, but could we be running over infants and old people in the drive-in parking lot?
I don't know. Maybe.
I want to search the news clippings from the LA Times on that. Michael is a fan of all this sci-fi and social commentary from the 60s and 70s and 80s. I want to ask you, when does the world end, like they say in this movie? In Death Race, there has been a total totalitarian state. All religion and politics have been banned, essentially. And it's just the end of the world, essentially. It's the decay of human culture. But they've been saying this is going to happen for a while. When does this happen?
I have nothing left. Maybe the Mayans will come through in 2012 and they'll just end it all.
Is that a slight to the Roland Emmerich movie coming out?
Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe just you guys want to see 2012. Bit.
No, you do. Not if they saw 10,000 BC.
Maybe not.
Yes. But anyway, if there ever is a death race, I will be right there with you with a snow cone in the stands.
Hey, I'll be driving.
You'll be driving? I'll be the navigator?
I don't know.
Why can I not be the navigator?
I've never seen you read a map before, Danny.
I have a...
And you always tend to be a little late, like, you know, for this kind of thing.
Well, you know, I can be okay.
Maybe I can push you out of the car for that 30 points that you can get for...
That would be very harsh. Anyway, this is Carradine at his best, folks. This is a David Carradine show. We've kind of drifted from topic, even though Sylvester Stallone's also very good. And speaking of Sylvester Stallone, this movie is kind of apolitical, just like Rambo was, in that it brings both views and kind of takes them to total extremes. You have this very anti-government view, but it nonetheless rags on all of those who are in any way moral.
Yeah, and we see that old habits die hard, despite the fact that we're completely reforming the government.
Yes, but let's not give it away. Let's not give it away because people need to see this movie.
The end scene is definitely worth it.
The whole third act is... The whole movie is definitely worth it. Again, we're gushing because we never saw this movie. We saw it this week, and it is like unbelievable. It has rocked my world. And you tell me that Ebert gave it 0 stars when it came out?
Yeah, I read Ebert gave it 0 stars. But like you said, maybe if you saw it back then, it would have hit a little harder.
If I saw it back then, I probably would have been reviled. But what can a pent-up conservative do when he sees a prosthetic baby being run? It's my favorite scene in the movie, I'm sorry.
Hey, I think it's either the Matador scene or Machine Gun Joe gunning down the Frankenstein.
How about when Frankenstein's navigator turns Machine Gun Joe on a route that ends him up in Nowheresville?
Or when he flips out on the fisherman at the end because he thinks just he's see Frankenstein.
It, just see it, people. It's available through Blockbuster Online. That's how we got it. You can't get it on Netflix because when the new one, which is an insult to this one. So any comments on the new one?
I wouldn't say it's an insult. They're definitely, you have to watch both movies
separately. It's a reimagining, let's just say that.
It has some vague hints. And David Carradine even does a voice in the beginning of the
movie.
Yeah,
the new one touches kind of on the social commentary
but
angle,
it lacks that whole perspective.
It's a lot cruder and, you know, just a Paul W.S. Anderson picture.
Yeah, pretty heavy-handed.
Yeah. So, watch it. Netflix, once that came out, enough people, I guess, stole DVDs of the rare Death Race 2000 that we have it no more on Netflix. A very sad thing. You can't get it anywhere else if you want to buy it. It's worth the $60 to buy the rare copy. But I'm vouching for Blu-ray. Come on, Blu-ray. Hey. It'll be the only Blu-ray of a 3:4 aspect ratio picture ever released. And how could you avoid that landmark?
It would definitely be something to buy.
But anyway, any final thoughts, Michael, on David Carradine?
David Carradine, watching both these films, seeing him in Kill Bill, he definitely does steal the screen. Doesn't matter what he's doing. Even if he's running around in a little black suit or he's the menacing Bill in Kill Bill.
Yeah. And returning to mock his cause of death, I think he found the only real-life way to one-up the 5-point palm exploding heart technique.
I don't think there's any other way he can one-up that on-screen death.
Well, you know, rope to the genitals is certainly a good second, at least.
Death
then.
By misadventure.
Why am I mocking the guy? He's a great B-movie star, people. See his movies. I'll certainly be watching more of his movies. And Michael, all I hope is that one of, like, the 6 movies he filmed before dying that are yet to be released is good. Just one good movie.
We can only hope that there's something in there that we can enjoy.
Maybe he'll even give the masterful performance that Heath Ledger gave us in The Dark Knight.
Maybe.
Hey, David Carradine as the Joker. That would have been pretty good. David Carradine as Batman.
Well, then you'd be focused in on that the whole time.
I would vouch for... You know, he does good jobs in these full body suits. He could be a good Bruce Wayne. Yes. Maybe Alfred. He could be Alfred. Oh, anyway.
But you lose Michael Caine.
But Michael Caine could then play Lucius and Morgan Freeman could then play Rachel. Because nobody cares if Rachel's played by Morgan Freeman, right?
Well, that would be an improvement, wouldn't it?
Not on Maggie Gyllenhaal.
On the first one.
Why are we drifting off topic here, people? I hope you subscribe to the podcast and you like this
banter between us.
It's kind of random day, but then I shifted random day to yesterday, and then this was supposed to be David Carradine retrospective day. But anyway, we love David Carradine here at the BucketCast. We do. So, Michael, you're going to be back on Wednesday. This is double duty this week for Michael. What are we going to be doing? Tell us that.
So, we got two more features for retrospectives this Wednesday. Danny's going to be doing The Taking of Pelham 1-2-3.
1974, of course.
Yeah, with Roger Shaw, so there's a little bit of star power there.
I bet you didn't even know there was an original. People are looking forward to the Denzel Washington version, which I hope is good.
I have to say, Roger Shaw is definitely over Travolta no matter what. I don't care.
Anyway, what are you going to do?
I'm doing The Longest Day. That's got the serious star power. And you got John Wayne, you got Peter Fonda. It's a great movie. We'll be talking about it on Wednesday.
Hey, you know in The Longest Day... Did they land on Obama State Beach, as Gordon Brown said?
I think they did.
Obama State Beach, yeah. I didn't know it existed. This has been the BucketCast. I'm Danny Baldwin for Michael Lester. Until next time, that means tomorrow, but Michael will be back on Wednesday. Go on iTunes, subscribe to us, rate us 5 stars, all that jazz, Michael. Sign us out.
See you guys later.
Yeah. We're on the front line. I get handed down the news. We're on the front line. Well, I never begin to choose. Just we're on the front line.